Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Sportland Training and Fitness Sports Talks Podcast, the people behind the posts. Now, constantly, over the last two or three years, all we've heard of is what people are doing in their day-to-day life, in the gym, in their business, and everyone's coming up pretty much with the same things. And you know what? I'm a little bit bored of that. So what I'm here to do is to find out the reasons why people are doing what they're doing. Find out what has scared them. Find out what's put them outside their comfort zone. Find out really what makes them tick, because that's where the magic happens. That's what's exciting, and that's what's going to help you, and it's going to help me push forward in our careers. And you know what? Just have a little bit of a conversation as well while we're at it, because at the end of the day, I listen to these in my car. I want to be entertained. So maybe I can help entertain you.
Now, we both know this is the bit that we all hate in the beginning of podcasts. It's time for the sponsorship. However, don't skip it. Sit tight and listen, because I've got a couple of cool things for you. This podcast is sponsored by Team Builder. Team Builder is the world's top software for strength and conditioning coaches for writing training programs online. From the US to Australia to the UK, Team Builder works with the top professional teams, including a majority of the Premier League, as well as any level below. Right now, if you use the code SPORTLAND when you start a free trial and gain access to complimentary exercise videos and training templates as part of your trial. You can even keep the programs when you purchase a subscription. So go to teambuilder.com to learn more. Now, teambuilder.com is teambuilder.com. This software is cool, and not only for online, it's going to help you organize and structure your teams so much easier. It's paperless. You've got all your wellness reports in there. You've got all your monitoring. You've got all your speed, conditioning. It's a real nice tool, which is going to cut out all those files and paperwork and clunky Excel spreadsheets for you. So check it out. Also, now what I need to talk to you about is the Strength Coach Network. The Strength Coach Network has been set up by Keir Wenham Flat, the rugby strength coach, and Jada Mayo of the Central Virginia Sports Performance Podcast and Seminars, CVAS for short. This website is the number one place in the world or the universe where you can find the best training, advice, talking to coaches, communicating with people that probably wouldn't answer an email or a cold call from you. So what you need to do is go over there. There's hundreds of lectures from Brian Mann, myself, Keir, Henk Krejcinov, Dr. Michael Yeses, Buddy Morris, you name it, it's on there. Get yourself over there and check it out. There's a link in the bio that's going to give you 2 days trial for a dollar. 2 days for a dollar to get inside that program. And you can see that it's going to be the best investment that you've made for your career at developing yourself as a strength and conditioning coach. I'm on it. I'm watching the lectures every week and talking to people and making stuff happen. So head over to the bio, check out the links. Team Builder is a promo code, Sportland, and also Strength Coach Network. Check the link in the bio. Now time for the podcast. Yeah, okay, everyone, welcome back to the Resurrected Sports Talks podcast. This is Understanding the People Behind the Posts. I am your host, Sam Portland, swearing, not giving a fuck, hopefully to entertain you whilst you are in your car, because you're gonna go to your job. You're going in, you're driving in your car, you're listening to me now, you go thinking what I'm doing. I'm just hoping for the best for you. All right. So my guest today is, if you don't know him, is Christian Woodford. He's out in Australia. He's a straight shooter. He says exactly how it is. He is all about coach education and getting things right for this industry. So like I said, you listen to this in your car on the way to the job that they gave you, the money that you just had to take. This is the guy that you need to listen to, because he's got some good views and he speaks the truth. So welcome, Christian. Thanks for coming on Sports Talks, my friend.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it. What a good intro. Fantastic fucking intro. Listen, anyone who swears is my type of person. And I've seen your stuff. So what I do is I sit back and I watch people's stuff. And you're very much my type of guy. Like, I'm going to say this quickly before I start. Graham Morris. Graham Morris, you're friends with you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I talk about Graham Morris on every podcast I'm on. Yeah. And I know you're friends with him. And yeah. Graham is just such an asshole, but I love him so much. He's an asshole. So I know you know him, but I love people who are honest. And like what you said, you just don't give a fuck if you swear. And I like your stuff because you're like me. You just don't talk shit. Your stuff is simplistic, but it's simplistic in a way that it's not like in our industry, everyone like overcomplicates everything.
Yep.
Where if you think about it, 99% of the time, the most simplest answer is the simple answer.
Yep.
Where most people want to go far too complex, where you talk a lot, you know, I see some of your posts when you talk about speed development, and you're fucking right about it. In terms of speed development, to get faster, yeah, you can do all these Bosch drills in terms of, yeah, they're okay, they're icing on the cake, but the best way you can get faster is actually go outside and fucking run fucking fast.
Yeah.
With long rest periods.
Yeah.
Where I think most people kind of get it too confused. They're trying to be too cute. Oh, I've got this brand new fucking drill that will help improve my speed by X amount, where it's just the most simplest answer is go outside and sprint with long recoveries and good technique.
Yeah, and a huge thing that people don't get with that as well, it's like every time you get faster, you have to learn it all over again because you're doing it faster. First step, second step, third step, fourth step. And that's kind of like, and that's why as well that I find within the professional game, within the club sports, they don't prioritise it because you've got these archaic fucking ostriches.
Wait, here's a good one, right? So I did a Twitter status, Sammy, right? And I'll read out to you. Listen to this, right? So this is having a crack at all those fuckwit cockhead coaches who think they know better than us. This is our fucking job, you motherfuckers, telling us what to do. Why don't we take skills training, you fuckheads? This is this. I'll read out to you. Bro, this is no shit. Football coaches who say they need, Sammy, kilometres in their legs are the same ones who are asking me why their athletes are so slow, weak and getting run over. Stop thinking running volume and fatigue, in brackets, grinding, and I fucking hate this, Sam, mental toughness training.
What
the fuck is that?
Yeah.
We'll best prepare footballers. This is 1970s thinking.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a coach out there listening to this and you hire, like, a professional S&C coach like yourself or myself and you're telling us what to do, it negates the whole fucking reason why you hire a professional in that area.
Yeah.
Yet in this industry, Sam, what you said, we don't prioritise. You think about it. Sport is played at fast speeds.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to think you want to develop that or expose athletes to that? Not as a performance thing, but as a vaccine to injury.
Yeah.
The hamstring injury is the perfect example. Where we have so many fuckwits, and Sam, I brought this up before, the what we call the mental toughness side of it.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up about that.
Yeah.
In what world is that mental toughness? You guys get that in rugby? Or we get that
mate, I fucking hate it like they do. And it's, you know, it's kind of like this whole thing is that you've got to be tough. You've got to be tough. You've got to be this. You've got to be that. And it's like, well, no, actually, you don't. You've just got to be really good at it. It's different. Like, you just got to be really good at the game that you play. Like, it's like a huge scapegoatism as well. It's like, because you've got S&C coaches that will use this whole we've got to be tough thing to program and periodize like workouts with diminishing returns in because they don't understand progressive training. And then also you've got coaches that actually have transitioned from being players and aren't actually coaches. They don't know how to coach.
That's interesting you say that because these days what's happening in AFL, no, you call it football, Sam, but that's soccer. That's soccer to us. Football is AFL. So AFL, Sammy, we're starting to get players who drift over because they don't want to find real work.
Yeah.
They go think, I played football. I understand. I can just be a strength conditioning coach where they've got no idea. So all they do is how they train. Most of the time is, I'll tell you the reason why most inept coaches go to the conditioning side of it, Sam, is because most coaches don't have the intellectual understanding of how to program a proper fucking strength, power, speed-based engine. So when you flog the fuck out of an athlete goes, he's a good coach because he made me tired.
Yeah.
Okay, for everyone out there, making someone tired shouldn't be a fucking badge of honour, right?
Yeah.
Making someone better is making someone better, you fuckhead.
Yeah.
It just annoys the fuck out of me. I'm a professional, and I might not carry on that way, but I have fucking studied this. I've given up my fucking life for this. I love this more than life, like yourself, Sam. And we have motherfuckers in our profession, Sam, who claim to be just as good as us, who program fucking exactly what you said, just fucking metabolic circuits saying it's for strength and power and it's going to make you better. Listen, yeah. Conditioning has its place, but not everything needs to turn into a conditioning-based session. And if you're using this, oh, but you need to be tough, all this shit, to say that you're a good coach, that's completely wrong. For me, what is your job as our job as performance coaches is, the first thing is injury reduction, is to prevent injury. That's the first thing. Because as Graham Morris always says, the best ability is availability.
Yeah.
If your players aren't available, you're not going to perform if you don't have your best, whatever, 22, 15 on the park. So that's the first one. The second one is athlete performance, So is to improve athlete performance instead of the physical side of jumping, sprinting, change direction. So my thing is you've got to go back to that. But most coaches who are inept at their job, Sam, I think you know a few of them, and I do, what they'll do is they'll flog the fuck out of the player, and they hope the best, because I'm a hardcore coach, so I'm going to make my players tired. It's stupid.
No, I completely agree. And it is that, because, and also it's the thing is as well, it's kind of, I posted about this the other day and I was talking about it because I'm not in the pro game. I still talk to a lot of pro players and guys that and they just tell me like, oh, I've got fucking sent round the post again today for dropping a ball. It's like,
What's sent round the post? What does that mean?
So say you're doing, like the goalpost.
Yeah.
If you dropped a ball in training, fuck off, get round the post. Run round the post, come back.
That's always old school ideology ever, yeah?
Yeah, man. I was in, and there's another key example, I was in a training session as well, and they were running like this set play. And one of the guys dropped the ball, all right? And he dropped it twice. One was like an easy chest catch pass. He just took his eye off the ball because he was concentrating on the new line he was running. And the other one was the guy who passed it to him. Wasn't the best pass. He dropped it. Coach goes, listen here, you fucking cunt. Get out of that fucking drill. You're not fucking good enough. And I was like, holy fuck. If that's your whole, if that's your idea in regards to like player welfare, development. And he's talking to like a 30-year-old grown man with two kids. Like
a third,
you can't talk to people like that and expect them to get the best out of them. It's like, well, hang on a minute. I'd be like, right, come step out the drill, or give him another chance and just talk to him, Or how about we teach him how to catch? How about we do closed practice drills of catching balls at different angles, different size balls, variability of task, and maybe you might get a better return.
Well, I mean, that old school way, that's an old school once again. Like, just abusing the fuck out of someone and saying they're not good enough is not coaching. Coaching is about breaking down something, and exactly what you said, and then educating them on how to do it more effectively. It's not calling them a cunt or saying that you're no good at it. That's what it's again the whole reason why they're at training, though. They want to get better they're at training to get better.
Yeah.
Like, fuck me, the shit like that, man, is just... It's just not. It's just not coaching. It's just. It's really negligent, really.
And yeah.
I mean, it's shit like that that gives everyone a bad name in this game.
Yeah, for sure. And also, it's just that you leave potential on the table.
100%. I mean, I look at Australian athletes in terms of undeveloped potential, where they limit their potential because they. And it's funny. A lot of athletes in Australia, they get to a certain point. We look at track and field as an awesome example in Australia, right?
Yeah.
We have a lot of younger athletes who come through the ranks, but when they get the senior level, they plateau off. And my opinion on that is a lot of them are injured. And a lot of my opinion on that is because they don't get taught how to train properly and effectively, and we're not maximising their potential. And it's a big issue right now because it's really looking at Australia. We're not developing... track and field athletes, we're going to struggle in the next Olympic Games. So for me, it's always what you'd say as well. It's an educational process. We're going to educate not only the athletes, the parents, but also the skill based coaches on what we actually do. Because I think most people have no fucking idea what we do as essence, strength and conditioning, physical performance, whatever the fuck you want to call us. Our job is to prepare the athlete physically for their chosen sport. So when they play their sport, they perform at higher levels and the chance of injury is reduced because they're more robust to the stress, physical stress.
Yeah, for sure. And I like, it's funny, it makes me laugh. Like, I do a lot of online stuff with people at the moment, which gives me the freedom to pick and choose. And I had one guy who was messaging me, and he was like, oh, I'm not going to continue. Did his off-season and did his pre-season with me for rugby. He was like, oh, I'm not going to continue with you anymore. I was like, okay, that's fine. Like, why? He was like, well, because I've got a strength and conditioning coach at my club, and he's doing the same stuff that you're doing. I don't have to pay for it.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah.
It's so funny you said that, because I cop that. They do the same thing. I guarantee you, that cunt's got no idea.
Yeah.
And you've got to, I don't know that for, I would bet my fucking whole career on that. He had no fucking idea. And you have all the idea. And when the player told the S&C coach at the club that he was working with you, the S&C coach would have said this: oh, but I do the same thing, you don't need him anymore. 100%.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. And it just makes me laugh because it's kind of, you know, it's... And these are not pro-grade players. They're like, you know, amateur, part-time guys that just... You just want to give them the best foot forward, because there's always, you know... I say a lot that everyone does too much. We do too much.
Yeah.
Too much of the time and too much of the wrong thing. And because, you know, I get people say, oh, why do you keep saying we do too much? Well, have you tried doing less?
I think everyone in general correlates volume with getting better.
Yeah.
I think most people don't understand the minimal effective dose. So dose response. Like, they just don't understand it. So they're going to flog someone regardless. And then they just kind of, exactly what you said, it's doing too much of the wrong thing.
Mm.
And if they can start understanding what is the minimal effective dose, so how much training stimulus do you need to give them to get the optimal response that you're after, until they start understanding that, all people are going to do is equate volume and fatigue with getting better, where for me and you, we understand what's the minimum effective dose. How can we develop this athlete without taking too much training time away from the actual skill? Because most people forget the most important number one rule for us is the sporting skill, not us. We are secondary.
Yeah.
Everything should be secondary, because my thing is there's no point of having this strong, powerful, explosive athlete if they can't play the game. What's the point of doing what we do? So I think the most important thing is understanding the sport's number one. Bring back to your other point as well. You were saying overtrained, too much volume. That's true as well. But also, I think of it this way as well. Are they overtrained or under-recovered? A lot of athletes don't understand the benefit of recovery. So my thing is, I'm talking about junior athletes. Most junior athletes don't fucking sleep. If you don't sleep, you're 7-8 hours quality a night. Sleep's been proven so important for restoration, regeneration. That's when the body adapts. So
putting the supplement industry out of business.
Well, you know what, Sammy? You probably fucking would put him out of business. Yeah, 100%. Because you're right, though. Fucking 100%. Sleep is so important. I've been working on with my guys, and I had massive improvements, because most of my guys are junior footballers.
Yeah.
And they're saying to me, I've never felt better. I'm more, my reaction time's better. My cognitive function's better, so their skills are better. Just off sleep, off one night's quality sleep, it's so much better. Because you know what they do, Sam? They all look at iPhones before bed. I stopped that.
Yeah.
And they didn't have that blue light. Their nervous system wasn't stimulated. What happened was they relaxed a lot easier. So I think that's another area that we need to hit. Yeah, I agree. Too much volume. But also, it might be the fact that they're under-recovered. So let's start looking at their sleep, nutrition, hydration. I think that's a big one.
Yeah, density is massive for me as well. That training. Yeah. Because...
Yep.
I've had some time in working with track and field athletes as well. And you know, like, he's the fucking goat, Dan Pfaff, right? When I was out in Altis and a few times, I went like fucking 8 or 9 years ago, just before it was called Altis. And
8 or 9 years ago, shit, like a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. And he did this presentation. He was talking about, it was like they do all these poolside chats, and it was just an open forum. And he started talking about training density and about how he uses 3-day rollovers, 4-day rollovers, 5-day rollovers, where you would have 5 workouts. And it's really nice for an off-season model. And I've played with it in season with a couple of guys that are having problems, is that you just do, on a day that you feel right, you do workout 1. If you get your recovery right, you do workout two, so you could do workout one on a Monday, then not to train till Wednesday or Thursday, depending on how you react. And it's like, yeah, and you go through and you just open up that density. And I did a 4-day rollover over a 14-day period with a guy, so I kind of fixed it because it was in season. He did it for 8 weeks, and he was 31, and he ran the fastest 10 he had run since he was 5 kilos lighter and 10 years younger. And broke a top.
What?
Yeah, and broke a top speed GPS PB. Like,
what?
Yeah.
And he's 31.
Yeah, and because we just, it was about managing the density.
I like how you use that, because you're auto regulating based on how you feel during that exact moment. So, exactly what you said, if you feel good, do this one. Yeah. If you don't feel good, let's modify it, but let's not do it.
Yeah.
That's important to note, that auto regulation based on how the individual feels at that time is very important.
Yeah.
Where I think what most people don't do, Sam, in our industry is that. They're just like, no, everyone should, like, the most important part of what we do is that what is the readiness to train? And I've been working on this lately, kind of similar to what you've been doing. I've been looking at my athletes in terms of what markers can we look at for readiness of a session. And obviously a good place to start, which is cost effective because it costs nothing, is obviously a subjective wellness questionnaire.
Yeah.
But I think I've got a jump mat, and I've been playing with RSIs off a drop jump and seeing what the ground contact time versus their flight time is. And I've been kind of doing a fair bit of stuff with that. And look, if you start looking at stuff like that, you start bringing that with your correlating with your subjective monitoring. Sometimes HRV, like a HRV with your heart rate and stuff like that. What's your heart rate with that within that zone? And I think if you kind of bring that all together and you can kind of make a kind of understanding of an art and a science decision on what you should do, I think that's fantastic. And obviously the rules, let's look at the end of the day. Did the program work for your athlete? Well, yes, because he's run quicker.
Yeah.
So there's nothing I can say or anyone else can say because I don't have context. Because for me personally, that ticks all boxes. The guy's older, so he should be slowing down, but he's not.
Yeah.
And he was 5 kilos lighter, so he's obviously carrying more weight.
Yeah.
Do you say he's 5 kilos lighter?
He was so he was 5 kilos heavier now than when he was before. And
okay, so he obviously had mass on somewhere. He had functional tissue on, but that still doesn't matter because he's still got to overcome that extra 5 kilos. So the fact that he ran quicker, fuck man, that's a credit to you. And obviously, Path is he's a guru, man. He's like very smart.
Yeah, no, he is, and it's gonna be like with speed stuff. You know, he's who I listen to the most. There's a couple of other guys, but you know, my brain was very, very. He was like a first, like my first love for speed, you know, like that first girlfriend you get, she never leaves your brain.
You can't get rid of her.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's 10 years later, she's fat and all that. But you still
love her.
Yeah.
You still love her. What do you believe? I want to ask you a question. So do you, I'm starting to understand, like, so what are your thoughts? Because my thoughts have completely changed as well in terms of how much carryover is there from strength to sprinting speed? Also, in terms of what point do you reckon there is, like, a point of diminishing returns where strength will no longer transfer to sprint performance?
Yeah.
Do you need to maintain strength in terms of what you're programming? I've always wanted to get different coaches' viewpoint. What's your viewpoint on that?
Yeah, so I like... first, if you look at some of the older researchers, you have to be lifting above 90% to activate high threshold unit, whatever. So you know, you're throwing that, and it's like, well, okay, so we've got to do that, then West Side do it well, so we'll do West Side. And I feel that size principle is a huge, huge important thing to play in here. Because, you know, if you take some of the two disciplines of some of the most explosive people on the planet, gymnasts and ballerinas, right? If you look at success leaves clues, so you look at their training, right? You know, it's not going to be, I'm actually going to go and hang out with a gymnast coach soon. But, you know, the only time you'll probably get them under the bar is when they're rehabbing. So, you know, so for instance, you know, it's like, what does that strength serve? And like with the kids that we've got, like they keep getting faster because their fucking hormones are going great, and like these are young kids. But then you put it on the other end, and then it's kind of like, well, strength will get you fast until being fast gets you stronger. So
yeah,
because of the central nervous system, Costa sprinting, first step, second step acceleration, 5 to 7 times body weight, top end, 10 to 12. You know, team sports guys, you may be looking at maybe 8 to 12 times body weight, you know, give or take, who knows. So that stress alone is going to carry over to being strong, where I think getting strong is just going to allow you, A, to have the capacity to recover from speed workouts, and also, and B, just put that early foundation of tenderness, strength in. But then when you get so, like my boy Alex Gray, who's at the Atlanta Falcons, we took a tenth off of his 10-yard sprint in 5 weeks. The heaviest weight he trap bar deadlifted was only 140 kilos for 4 reps, and he's 6'6" and 240 pounds. So,
damn.
So in terms of what got us, what got him faster, it wasn't the fact that he was strong. It was the fact that we had worked the speed angle well, and also how, you know, his problem. So, I try and go after this with all my guys. It's like, where's their biggest gap? What's their biggest limiter that's not allowing them to do their ultimate task? And a lot of these team sport guys is sprinting. It's running speed, change of direction. So what do they look like in their movement, in their basic? And he was a massive, he was long torso, long legs.
Yeah.
So it was basically his torso is the same length of his fucking legs. Like he's just mad.
Buff.
Yeah. Yeah. Buff. You fold him in half and he's clean equal, you know? And like, so his ability to absorb force wasn't great. And we put him on the force plates and we checked it all out. So we went hard after that angle. It was like, right, how are we sequencing? And I put a post up today of him doing some banded bird dog type stuff. It's like,
I saw that.
How are we sequencing? How are we absorbing from that like real micro level to the big macro level of, you know, actually when we're jumping, when we're loading, you know, what is my regime of muscular work? How are we putting it all together? And I don't think you can put, so for him, that was, you know, off the top of my head, 0.8 times body weight for 4 reps on a trap bar deadlift. And we took a tenth off his 10 yard sprint. So
strength had nothing to do with it.
No.
It was the fact that you attacked the specificity of sprinting. Yeah. You obviously were teaching the intricacies of how important. What people don't understand is the skill of timing, coordination, synchronization, contraction, relaxation. I'm a big proponent of these. I'm looking at it and saying strength isn't the answer. People think strength is the panacea to all sports problems. It's not. I just think strength, what you said, Sam, is critical. Strength is just that baseline foundation that we need for tensile strength, tissue strength, in terms of becoming more robust to the forces going through the body when you are accelerating or top end speed. So I just think that strength is important. And exactly what you said during the novice or the junior level, in terms of, yeah, they're just because their window of adaptation is quite large.
Yeah.
And they've got testosterone of a bull. Mm. Obviously, they're going to get stronger, but they're also going to get stronger because it's new, it's a skill they're learning.
Yeah.
But I think that guy's a perfect example. That guy's obviously, you know, he's a high level athlete. And he's trapping 140 kilos.
Yeah.
But you still took, you know, it's still a fair bit point, whatever, off his 10 or 5, whatever it was.
Yeah,
so,
10-yard, tenth of his 10-yard in 5 weeks. Like, he came in.
Which is huge. That's massive. That's huge.
He came in, you know, and I had him, he was on and off for about 3.5-4 months. And he came in with, in a 12-week window, he came in with a 43-centimetre counter movement jump, walked into a camp with 56.
Fuck. Jesus. And what did you, so, and the only strength track, like the heaviest he lifted was 140 kilo on the trap bar.
Yep.
So what were you doing for his, were you doing heaps of loaded jump work? Were you doing unloaded counter movement jump? What were you doing?
No. So we basically, we manipulated because of, he had a lot of like the sequencing issues and that lumbar pelvic hip region.
Yep.
So we did a lot of isos. We did a lot of his big thing because he was long body, long leg, and a huge thing that I'm finding more and more with athletes is that relaxation ability. So we went after that really, really hard. We didn't do, we hardly did, in his peaking block, we did some trap bar jumps. We did some oscillatory works for the contract relax type stuff. And, you know, big thing was like, you know, he rolled in. So I do a lot of couch work. So I can, I try my best to be with anyone like a one-stop shop. You know, I'm like, full disclaimer, I'm not qualified as a physio, but I'm fucking coached long enough, you know, to know.
You know once you've been doing it long enough.
Yeah, and I've hung out. I ran rehabs at the last two clubs I was at. So you sit on physios, you learn. I've broke myself fucking too many times and put myself back together. And he rolled in with like 15 degrees of hip internal rotation, laying on the couch, week one.
15?
Yeah, and exactly. In the end of the GPP block, he was walking in with 45 degrees hip internal rotation. So there's no...
Fuck, man, that's so much better. Yeah. That's huge, man.
And it was all about understanding, you know, the hip cuff is massive for me. The hip cuff is massive, so underrated, underutilized, and it's that same thing. It's like, because people neglect things that they don't know how to program for, understand the effect of it. And it's kind of, you know, we were spending half an hour to 40 minutes doing all the sequencing work. You know, I'd do 40 minutes... Yeah, we PB time on the couch with him was an hour and 10 minutes working his body. Yeah, so doing all these mobilizations, manipulations, soft tissue work, tone regulation stuff. And it was like, because it's that push and pull lever system, it's like, right, we need to downregulate tone that's causing us problems and then upregulate tone that's not. So it's kind of like I'm pulling us and pushing us in the right direction. And, you know, we did this with my players when I had a group. It was kind of like, this was perfect scenario. He was paying me one-on-one. We had all this stuff, a load of time. Time wasn't an issue. You know, obviously a very qualified person. But then when I had 25 players doing this, what I did is I taught them to coach each other. I always do the rule of three. You got one doing, one watching, one coaching. So I would run the demo. I would take them through. It's like, right, you've got these coaching points. Do you know what this should look like? Sweet, go. 30 minutes every morning, the players were working on each other and understanding and developing and putting these things in place. And you're getting, because education is that you teach the man to fish. Don't feed him.
I think what you did was brilliant, because if you think about it, you just got buying. Because if they understand it, of course they're going to fucking do it.
Yep.
If they do it and they do it better, the chances are we're going to get the desired adaptation that we want. In your case, it happens. So for me, I reckon it's empowering. Number one, it's empowering because you've said to them, listen, I want you to learn how to do this so we can coach each other so we can all get better. So I just think it's the knowledge base is so important. I just want to quickly bring up how you talked about how important the hip joint is.
Yeah.
I think and you talked about mobility, right?
Yeah.
I look at everything this way. I don't know how you've been looking at it, but I look at everything, obviously – I never used to think mobility was a big deal. And then the older, in terms of more experience, then you start to understand how important hip mobility is. Also, hip stability is important as well. But hip mobility, but here's a big one. Ankle mobility and big toe mobility, especially for the foot where we sprint.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a big, big fucking deal. I'm starting to look at the foot-ankle complex being so fucking important. You think about it. If your feet are off, your whole skeletal system's off. If you lack stiffness through your foot ankle complex, you're going to leak energy when you sprint as well. So I'm starting to look more and more at the role of ankle mobility, lower body stiffness, and how we can improve that. But also just kind of looking at, like, a perfect example is someone who a lot of people have flat feet, Sam, especially in football, and they pronate, they roll in. That's a fucking huge issue. We're going to get valgus up the chain. Yeah. We're going to have a number of different issues, right? So I reckon as a whole, we definitely don't look at, and I like how you said, we're talking about, most people out there wouldn't understand how you're using the word tone.
Yeah.
Tone, for everyone out there, how Sam's using it is being overactive. Tone, not toning the muscle where most people use it. But I like how you use that one in terms of being overactive and the relax, contract approach, which is so important. But I think the big one, and the fact that he spent an hour doing that, that's so important, because you've just improved his hip internal rotation. You said it was internal, correct?
Yeah.
Was by like a massive amount. Now, hip internal rotation and if you have less of it, has shown to increase risk of ACL rupture. Yeah. So the fact you've done that, you've just bulletproofed him or minimized the chance of ACL rupture. And what we see that all the time with our guys is if we don't put in the work in terms of the mobility side of it, we're going to have a big issue. And I think that most coaches want to keep throwing that, okay, more weight, more external weight on the bar, more heavier, more cleans, more squats. It's not the answer.
No.
The answer is moving better. The answer is, okay, well, what mobility needs do this athlete need to minimize the chance of injury and maximize their performance? I think it's filling the bucket. Which bucket has the athlete not filled for his, at training practice? So what is the limiting factor that we need to do? And I think by doing that, it's definitely going to lead to transfer. You know, at the end of the day, you need to ask yourself, did this program work? Go back to what your goals were. And for you, it was, okay, well, let's hip internal rotation went from that to that.
Yep.
Your speed improved. You took a 0.8 off the second. So once again, you've got to look back, what was the goals, and you reached them.
Yeah, and that, I think this goes back to, you know, so now, like, working on my own, working with individual athletes and consulting with people, I can have this conversation where before I lose my job for it, and it's it's like, I'm not gonna fucking, I don't care if you are not putting up the numbers you think you should be. I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, you can't, so a lot of people use strength scores and a fucking 1.2K or a yo-yo and a body fat measurement to go, they were here, they've gone up, they're not as fat anymore, everyone fucking hates me, but I need a contract extension. So you can't, but now I'm in a position where it's like, well, no, this is quality. I don't, like, I know what's going to work. If you trust me, then we're going to do this. If not, get back in your fucking car and fuck off.
I actually love how you said that's so true, though, because it's like almost like S&C coaches use these outdated variables and be like, okay, well, fuck, you improve your squad. It's almost like, give me a contract extension. Motherfucker, your role is not to improve, like, your job is not to improve their fucking squat numbers. Your job is to improve their athlete performance. So you need to ask, it's the real coaches who ask the hard questions.
Yeah.
I used to ask myself, I'm asking myself now, fuck, how the fuck can this guy who's come to me, how can I make him better in his sport?
Yeah.
Because if he gets better in his sport, he's got more of a chance of getting a contract. If he gets more chance of getting a contract, that he's going to live a better life. So that's how I look at everything.
And we all get paid.
For me, and we all get fucking paid. So I think that our role needs to move away from Sam doing these ones.
Yeah.
What's their 1RM squat, dead, bench, row, clean? Yeah. What's that? Okay, did they improve? That's how we've been going, how we've been evaluating our roles. It needs to move away from that and needs to move away towards, okay, well, how can we evaluate our position?
Mm.
And in my opinion, the best way we can evaluate is through fucking athlete. Look, exactly what you said. I think a 10, a 20-meter sprint, a vertical jump, I like those athletic markers because the athlete is expressing force rapidly against our own body weight. So that's critical. Power and speed, the most two important athletic attributes.
I say to my guys, like, when we talk, like, the guys that I work with, they're like, what are we going to assess? And I was like, well, there's two fucking numbers that I only care about, is how fast you run and your fucking signing bonus, and that's it.
Because, how true is that, though, man?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Because
so true.
If you're getting a signing bonus, it means you're better at your sport. And, you know, when I was in the environment with the club, I bartered and I came up with this game called Speedgate Golf because it was basically stress inoculation to, you know, like when you come over a phobia, basically applied that to using speed gates with players, so they become it became part of their daily life. So we would be testing and monitoring speed twice a week, every week. It was a long-term process.
Oh, really? Wait, in season?
Yeah. So we were
monitoring. Fuck off, really?
Yeah. So
that's awesome. That's
so we were using GPS to track the top-end stuff, and then we would always be looking at 10s and 20s every week in season.
Fuck! Did you get correlation with, in terms of injury prediction, like, were there any players that nearly dropped off in terms of their speed and then got injured or anything?
Yeah.
Did you see any correlation
with that? So in terms of the program that I put in the first year, I didn't have a single lower body soft tissue injury.
Fuck, man. Boom. Huge.
25 players. Yeah, not a single. And then in my second year, I had this one guy that I was telling you about was the 30-year-old, and he had just got a new child, a newborn baby, got sick twice and had two hammy flare-ups. And that was all like external stress related.
That's external stress. I mean, yeah. That's not you. So
that's why we just opened his density out. But yeah, I did I'm writing an ebook about the application of this. I did an hour and a half podcast with Just Fly talking about it because.
Oh yeah.
I had so in terms of how it works, when obviously because it is everything's all inoculation and stress, so you can achieve a higher level of expertise.
Performance.
So we were putting this in. And then all of a sudden, like, you go through this game, like, it basically starts as, like, can you run 10 metres in 2 seconds for me? And then you're teaching spatial awareness, time, you're learning. So then people, you know, just run the reps. They'll just run the reps, and then someone will hit, like, a 2-0. And then basically, if you hit 2 seconds on the nose, you've got to go on my Instagram. And so with a handshake with the timer. But then it would be like, right, I want... you're going to walk by and then watch the person do it and listen to the time. And then they started correlating the most efficient movers were running more consistent times. And then you basically can progressively, like if you hit a 2, hit a 1.9, hit a 1.8, hit a 1.7. And it's like, can you do it well? Can you keep doing it well? And then we got everyone, and I had all of my backs were running under 1.65 for 10 meters.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah,
that's over, quick and fuck.
Over a are process.
Aren't backs bigger, guys?
The backs are no. So they're the more athletic guys.
They're still fucking good. 1.65, fucking good for.
Yeah, so it had like a guy. It was funny, like when people would be like, "Well, he's slow. They signed him. He's slow. He's not slow. This is his number now. This is what he can do for you. He's a different player.
He's quick now.
Yeah, because you always monitor the things that matter." And if you're going to monitor the things that matter, like, you've got to understand what effect that your training is having on that variable. So there were times where I'd say to players, it's like, you condition everything. So it's like, right, we're doing speed. How are we doing speed today? Well, we're doing in trainers, so they know it's a technical day. All right?
Yeah.
If we're doing speed today, Sam, oh, we're in fucking boots. Okay, yeah, so we're gonna be working, we're gonna be putting force into the ground. And then the icing on the cake was there was a cage out the back of the clubhouse that had like a 4G on it. It was like, boys, fucking boots on, GPS on, in the fucking cage, let's go, cunts. And they knew that day was the day that you turned up to party. That was match day. And boys were repping it, and I was trying to get them above 95% of their top speed within 20 meters. That was the next goal, because, you know, time and space is king in speed in team sports, isn't it? So we were trying to get them faster, sooner, and trying to learn to go through the gears. And fuck, it was a great project. It was a fucking great project to do. And
I mean, fuck, it's just proven that works. So because what you were doing is the players were watching it. They saw the more competent performers,
yeah.
And if they're doing that consistently, you're exposing athletes to that.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. And that's smart because it's showing them the most effective and efficient way of doing it. I look at it this way: it's sprinting. It's a motor skill.
Yeah.
So the more times you train it, what's going to happen? The better you're going to get at it. As long as the coaching's okay and you allow the hardest thing, Sam. I don't know if you stroke because. I personally, for me, I've always wondered about this. But in pro sport, I'm guessing it'd be a lot harder to get the guys to understand the importance of rest between efforts.
Yeah.
If they don't, because they're used to getting flogged, and then you're saying, "Well, I want you to rest 2 minutes, 3 minutes." Most of the guys want to go again. So
yeah.
For me, it's kind of getting them to understand the benefit of rest periods and what it has on speed development and speed performance, but also to understand that. You don't need, you know, speed or change of direction. It's not about being tired. It's about, or especially when you do a plyo speed, anything session like that's highly neural. It's not, we're not chasing fatigue. We're chasing stimulation. So until they understand that, you know, they're not going to get better. And you see most athletes, it's just a conditioning session. It's not a speed jump space session. And I think the most important thing that you can push across is, and I really push it with my guys is giving a maximum effort. That's the first one. But and that's if they're not giving a maximum effort, that's where you're not going to get that those adaptations. Yeah, I'm sure you can improve speed capacity, but it's about understanding you've got to give a maximal effort, and that's where competition comes in, because competition breeds improvement, and whenever they compete, as long as they hold their form quite well, they're going to get quicker. So
yeah,
I just think that's a big one. And you've just – I like that game, though, because what you've done is you've exposed them to what level – and at the repeat, you've got to be able to repeat that as well, what level you need to be able to get quicker.
Yeah.
And what technique did they – what was the best technique to get there for each individual athlete, which is important to do.
And it is interesting, because it's kind of like – what it did is it taught me and showed me a bit of insight into – the power of transfer of sub-max sprint development. So in terms of like that, so I kind of like follow a mold of like learn, load and execute. So terms of like how we're loading that sprint and how we're loading, and it's transferable across the whole thing. It's kind of like, so if I understand that, you know, or at max I can put 5 times body weight through first step, for instance. It's like, okay, so should we let's back off that and let's rep efficiency at 3 times body weight as numbers. Yeah. And then because of the in season and the team sport, and that's the huge thing, it's a motor skill. So it's kind of like I won't let my players go fast until it's
for that learning.
And then when the hammer goes down and that first time like someone goes, I'm working with a player and we're having these things, working through that first and second step because it's the most important thing for them at this point. It's like, right, slow, 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 couple of weeks, 6 weeks of doing the same stuff over and over and over again, put the hammer down, whoosh. By the time they hit fourth step, they're fucked because they're producing so much power. It's like, right, well, let's fix that problem now. So we go back and we go forward.
I like that because you're breaking – because what you're doing is you're doing the skill at a slow velocity. So in terms of how I view it, and because of my background with neuro, is when it's a slow movement, you're going to get greater sensory feedback. You get greater sensory feedback, your nervous system is going to learn the skill better. So I look at this – I don't know what you think about it, Sammy, but MAS running I think is bullshit. Oh. I think MAS has a place, but I think MAS is bullshit. My reasoning is this. They become less fucking efficient at sprint at running, right?
Yeah.
You might as well. I'd rather do tempo runs and get really strong technique and patterning than do MA. I don't know what you think about, but MAS running, I don't really like it.
No, it's fucking it's bullshit, man. I fucking hate it.
It's I think it's a lot of shit. But I think too many people go on the MAS stuff. Like I had a boy yesterday saying, "Oh, my S&C coach, what he said, I should I'm going to do MAS." I said, "Man, personally, I don't think you should, because if especially at his young age, I said, listen, I want you to do some sub-maximal tempos with me, and I'll talk about technique with him instead of just doing this MAS stuff when their technique by the end of it's fucking shot, man.
Yeah.
Because they've got to get to that part. And as you know, what's the most important thing with athletic development is about forced transference. It's about no leakage. So what's happening when they break their skill down, they're fucking leaking energy everywhere. So the motor pattern becomes less efficient. If it's less efficient, we're going to leak out energy, neural and fucking metabolic. So we're going to fatigue a lot quicker. And when we fatigue a lot quicker, injury chance occurs, stuff like this. I think if we can slow it down, I think what you did there, you're slowing that neural skill down to sprinting, and then when you drop the hammer, as you put it, was it drop the hammer or whatever it is, drop the hammer, they can fucking do it. Oh, who would have fucking thought?
Yeah.
Because you taught them at a fucking slow speed, you taught them the fucking skill first, and then you bought the velocity.
Yeah.
Well done, but it's not that fucking hard, but we seem to, you and I think it's normal, but most people think, what would probably say, like, if you don't have a understanding of this, people fear what they don't know, Sam.
Yeah.
People fear, and we're so stuck in this traditional dogma of heavyweight training, 1RMs, for me personally, it's like I look it up. I just try and look at – I always ask questions. It's like, well, fuck, I have more questions than answers these days.
Yeah.
So if I ask someone, like talking to someone like you, to hear that story is awesome. Mm. So that I can use that and apply it. Too many people in this industry, I think, are still stuck in this dogmatic approach of what we've done in the past is the best way. I'm not saying that's not. All I'm saying is we need to refine what we're doing and always keep getting better. I don't think – I think technology has helped.
Yeah.
I think technology isn't the be-all and end-all. I think we flog technology too much. Mm. I think what is coaching is coaching everything. Until we start understanding, perfect example would be something like someone brings up like GPS units, which is fantastic to give you analytics, but all that fucking GPS data means fuck all if your athlete can't fucking run.
Yeah.
They can't sprint. They don't understand the difference in body position between acceleration, top end speed,
yeah,
the positioning of your body. You know, that's like if I, like you had a post up, Sammy, about I think an athlete was doing like a 45 degree halt.
Yeah.
Was that it? 45. And you were, I love that because the reason why I love that is because you're giving the athlete a context of understanding positional requirements.
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing? I'm
guessing? Yeah. Yeah. And learning to push and understanding, you know, actually how we load through the body and how.
Yep. So.
Because it's projection.
And I'm getting. Yeah. So I guess you're teaching, attention as well.
Yeah.
Through the whole chain.
Yeah.
And I like how you used the word push there because my thing is most athletes, when they actually first step, they step.
Yeah.
Or they we don't want steps, we want push. Everything's about Newton's third law, action, reaction. Like,
yeah.
And this is what I talk about with my guys is, you can, yes, okay, yes, we want athletes who are strong because they can apply force to ground. Apply force to ground is important, but it's the application of force transfer in the ground that's so important. What is the vector of force transference?
Yeah.
And if you get the vector right, you get the understanding, you get the amplitude, direction, stuff like that.
Yeah, man.
Pretty much, chances are going to get quicker.
You're going to go. You're going to move. And then it's leg speed, leg stride length, ground time, flight time. And then you just keep chasing. It's game of cat and mouse. And it's funny, like, it all goes back. And the more conversations I have with coaches that have been coaching for longer periods of time, it's always more questions. Questions. And there's no absolutes and there's no finite way. Because it's so subjective, which is what I like, and being in the position that I'm at now, and you'll find as well, you work with individuals and in the private sectors, you've got time to play. You're not judged by X, Y, Z. You know, good elite badges. So as I say, like, don't chase elite badges, chase elite coaching, chase the art.
That's true. True is that though, Sam. Like, I like what you said because most kids, I don't know in England, but in Australia, most young sports science kids, they chase a tracksuit. They're so concerned with chasing that, Sam, yet they've got no skill set.
Did you? Yeah, I was like, I wanted to work for the club that I supported and wanted to play for, and I end up working for them, and the fucking guy I was working for was a fucking retard.
That's interesting, though. How funny is that? So you end up working with the team that you grew up following. And then when you got there, what were your thoughts? We're like, oh, this is, you know, I've reached my pinnacle now.
Yeah.
When you got there, we're like, oh, what a fucking letdown.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, Kieran, I was working under him for a year within the academy, a very good experience. Love that guy to death. And then...
Yeah, he's a smart dude. Like,
he's a gun,
he's like man. Me. And, he's a bit like me and you where he stirs a lot of people up. No, just because he's got strong opinions. But, yeah. I just like how he does. Like, he stirs a lot of people up, obviously.
Mm.
And he's like me and you. He's not afraid to tell people how it is. And
yep.
I think the best coaches in the world are insecure. They kind of just like, look, this is what I believe in. You know, it works for me. Hey, I'm going to put it out. If you don't like it, fuck off.
Yeah.
And guys like him and you and me, it's you need people like that to push any industry forward.
Yeah.
And I think... Obviously, you learning under him fucking would have fucking helped a lot. And then gone from him to this other guy must have been fucked.
Oh, mate, it was brutal. Like, it felt, you know, it was tough. It was tough, put it that way. But he is the head coach's best mate, so, you know.
Well, once again, it goes back to it's not what you know, it's who you know sometimes.
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure. Listen, Chris, are we going to have to wrap this up because I've got to head out. But, mate, I appreciate the chat. It's been really, really good. We're definitely due a part two because we need to talk about, you know, where you are, your business and everything that you're doing.
We'll do a part two.
We'll have some more time.
I appreciate it. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for letting me come on, but we should definitely chat soon. So thank you.
No worries. And then for people that, what's your, I'll put it in some of the show notes for people.
Put it in the show notes. Yeah. I'll send them to you, brother. I'll send them to you.
Yeah, cool,
Coach
man.
Coach Woodford on Instagram, but I'll send you through the rest of them.
Okay, cool. Happy days.